Would like to welcome our visitors this morning. Let you know we're very proud that you're here. We want you here. We want to love you. We want you to be a part of this thing. Further note that I share this Sunday school hour with Brother Adam down here. He sits on the front. So every other Sunday, one of us will teach. So there's hope if you don't like me. Maybe you'll like him. He's a wonderful teacher. If you will, turn your Bibles to the book of Jonah. It's going to take a very brief time in the book of Jonah. I'm feeling very grateful this morning. I don't know, you carry different emotions around with you throughout the day, and for some reason lately I've been feeling very grateful. You know, you can't hardly be arrogant. You can't hardly be rude. There's a lot of things you can't be when you've got a grateful heart. We ought to carry around a spirit of gratefulness. And I ask God to never let me take for granted the things in this world that He's allowed me to have and He's done for me and He's done through me and He's allowed me to experience. We ought to really think about what the Lord's done for us. In the book of Jonah, verse number 1, it says, "Now the word of the Lord came unto Jonah, the son of Amittai." Jonah is introduced here in this first verse as the son of Amittai. Now, Jonah had an association with his father in this verse. For some reason, a lot of times when they introduced a man in the Bible, they tied him with his heritage, with his father. So I did a word search, and I didn't find another mention of Amittai anywhere in the Bible. But regardless of whether he was a good man, a powerful man, a slob, Jonah and his name was tied to his father. He was the son of Amittai. It's the way the book opens up. Now, the word Amittai does mean faithful and my truth. And I'm not sure if Amittai lived up to that meaning of his name. But I know a lot of times going through life, we're tied to our heritage. We're tied to the people that went before us. A lot of you guys have gone through life with an association, maybe with your parents or with some affiliation with some group, and doors have just flown open for you. Opportunity. You were picked first on the football team or on the tennis team. You were given grace in a lot of different areas, and life was just easy for you. You guys looking at me like that doesn't fit you. That wasn't you? There's always been people that way, right? There's always been the niece or the nephew of the boss that's climbed the ranks, and it looks like, well, they didn't deserve it. Or there's always been the quarterback that, you know, isn't it amazing how that they tend to be if you were a quarterback in here, I'm sure you deserved it. But isn't it amazing how they always have maybe it's the coach's son that's the quarterback? And that's probably because they practice in the evenings together and, you know, they probably are good. But what about the average kid? The average kid that didn't have the dad that was out in the yard with them. They never get to that level because they don't have that association. And they're never given a chance, for that matter. You know, a lot of us don't get a chance in life because we don't have those associations going in. Now, I've got to admit something here. I've had both situations. I've been in situations where, you know, I was passed over or I wasn't privileged because I didn't have some association. But I've also been in situations where I got things I didn't feel like I deserved because I was, you know, a known quantity or something. So, you know, I can't say too much. You know, like I said, I'm grateful and I've been blessed. But it's this association thing that I want us to kind of think about this morning. Sometimes we blame our lack of success on not being born into the right situation. Or, you know, we're downtrodden because life was stacked up against us. Well, a few weeks ago I asked you guys in one of the lessons, don't you see a better version of yourself? Wouldn't you like to become that better version of yourself that you've got in your mind? Well, did anyone think about that at all? Did you react to that at all? Did you make any changes to be healthier or happier or closer to God? Have you made any motions in your life to get to where you, that person, that spiritual person that you want to be? If you didn't make any changes, what is it that stopped you? Brother Adam talked a few weeks ago about strongholds. Could there be some strongholds in your life that's holding you back? You don't have to be held back. You don't have to submit to the fear in your life. You know, I'm going to go ahead and skip to one of my... In 2 Timothy 1:7, you guys don't have to turn, but the verse says, "For God hath not given us the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind." I use that verse quite often because fear sometimes sets in and it paralyzes us. I was reading a book about a man who had been shark attacked, and he was on his surfboard and he'd gone over away from the group to surf some waves that he'd seen, and the group was closer to the shore, and this shark was circling him, and he literally attacked him. And this man, he was holding on to his board, and he was thinking through his mind how he was going to get away from this great white shark. You know, those things are sometimes as big as a Volkswagen. And it was circling him. And the book goes through how his brain was cycling these thoughts, and his fingers and his hands and his arms would not move. He was paralyzed with fear. That fear prevents us from doing so many things. What he finally did was he finally separated his emotions from what was in his hands, and he took his surfboard and he jabbed the shark in the nose. And he started screaming to the people near the shore and warning them. And he basically saved dozens of lives and his own by taking action and not being paralyzed by fear. Because if you're paralyzed by fear in that situation, you're bait. You're dinner for the shark. So it's important that we not let fear paralyze us. So going back to the affiliation of us with our heritage, God chose a people. He chose the Jews. Raise your hand if you're a Jew in here. Bowden, Georgia doesn't hold a lot of Jews, does it? So God chose the Jews as his people. They were to be a privileged people. They were His special chosen people. They were He was the Messiah that they'd been looking for, but they didn't recognize Him as that Messiah. Let's turn over into the book of Romans. We'll get a little bit deeper into the Scripture here. It's Romans 11. That's where we're going to read from. Romans 11:5. "Even so then at this present time also there is a remnant according to the election of grace." This remnant that this verse is talking about are the Jews that are here on earth that will be saved. That's the remnant that Jesus is talking about there. Turn to verse 7. And it says, "What then? Israel hath not obtained that which he seeketh for, but the election hath obtained it, and the rest were blinded. According as it is written, God hath given them the spirit of slumber, eyes that they should not see, and ears that they should not hear unto this day. And David saith, Let their table be made a snare, and a trap, and a stumbling block, and a recompense to them. Let their eyes be darkened, that they may not see, and bow down their back alway." These are the Jews here that have decided to reject Christ as the Messiah, as being equal with and being the Son of God. There's a deeper study here about the Jews' eyes being darkened, and that would confuse all of us, including myself. So I'm not going to get into that study because that's pretty deep. But I'll summarize this as saying God is God. God does what He does, and God is sovereign. It's His business how He conducts His business. So these Jews had rejected God, and Paul writes here about their eyes being darkened. In verse 11 it says, "I say then, have they stumbled that they should fall? God forbid, but rather through their fall salvation is come to the Gentiles, for to provoke them to jealousy. Since none of us are Jews, there's only two categories here. We must be the Gentiles. Because of the Jews' fall, because they did not embrace Christ, Christ is being offered to the Gentiles, being offered to us. We don't have the affiliation that the Jews have. We were not the chosen. We were not the one, the star to be chosen to start the game. We're the benchers. We're the folks that got pulled off the bench and pulled into the game. Because the Jews didn't appreciate what they had. And it said we were to provoke them to jealousy. The Jews can see what Christ has done for us, and they will become jealous. It says, now if the fall of them be the riches of the world, and the diminishing of them the riches of the Gentiles, how much more their fullness? For I speak to you, Gentiles, inasmuch as I am the apostle of the Gentiles, I magnify mine office. This is Paul writing this letter. Paul was a Gentile himself. And he says, I'm a Gentile just like you guys. Now, Peter was a Jew. And Peter had to speak and bridge the Jews and the Gentiles later on. But Paul was a Gentile. And he was to speak and reach out to the Gentiles. He brought the gospel to the Gentiles, to the common man. If by any means, in verse 14, I may provoke to emulation them that which are my flesh, that might save some of them. For if the casting away of them be the reconciling of the world, what shall the receiving of them be but life from the dead? Now, everybody look up at me. I want you to kind of reset, because these are the verses I want to get into at verse 16. If you haven't heard me so far, please hear this. Verse 16, for if the first fruit be holy, the lump is also holy. And if the root be holy, so are the branches. And if some of the branches be broken off, those are the Jews that are broken off, and thou, being a wild olive tree, were grafted in among them, and with them partakest of the root and the fatness of the olive tree. The Jews are this branch that were broken off the olive tree. The Gentiles, the wild olive tree. Were any of you guys wild before Jesus grafted you in? Were grafted in. And it says that we now partakest of the root and the fatness of the olive tree. Jesus is the root. He feeds the branches. Now we partake of that root. We've been grafted in to a place we never were to be, at least not in our mind. This is, you know, God chose the Jews, and He had a plan the whole time. He died for all. But looking at this thing, we were never meant to be there. We were grafted in. That's something that wasn't naturally there. This branch of the Gentiles didn't naturally grow with that tree. An action had to happen. There had to be a grafting in. This gives us the full benefit of the root. We got the full benefit of the ones who were chosen. We are now special. We are now privileged. We are now the ones that get the full benefit of those that start life in a privileged position. Because we're now equal with those. It says, boast not against the branches, but if thou boast, thou bearest not the root, but the root thee. Thou wilt say then, the branches were broken off that I might be grafted in. Well, because of unbelief they were broken off. And thou standest by faith. Be not high-minded, but fear. This great gift that God has given us by grafting us in, we're not to get high-minded around this. We've got to be grateful. We've got to have grateful hearts. And we've got to realize we didn't start out this way. We were a wild olive branch. We were tied to the natural things of this world. We were broken off from that root, and we were grafted in to the root of Jesus Christ. So let's talk a little bit about grafting. What is grafting? You know, Brother Dean talked a lot about fruits the other night. And I thought it was interesting that deeper into this lesson, which I prepared a couple weeks ago, we share some of the verses. So maybe God's got something to say through these analogies. Grafting is a horticultural technique whereby tissues from one plant are inserted into those of another so that the two sets of vascular tissues may join together. So you've heard of grafting into fruit trees, right? You take the root or the stump or the stalk, as they call it, of a tree. You take a branch from another tree and you graft it in. You cut a slit. I know there's a lot of different techniques, and you bind it, and that branch then develops the fruit of that root and the healthiness thereof. So there were three things that have to happen for a successful grafting to take place. Now think of the spiritual application of this. The vascular tissues of the root and the branch must be placed in contact with each other. You have to make personal contact with Jesus. You can't do this thing from a distance. This is an intimate joining. This is a contact joining. It's a personal joining. It has to be between you and the root. It has to be between you and Jesus Christ. There has to be contact. Successful grafting only requires that a vascular connection take place between the grafted tissues. The vascular connection is just like the vessels in our body. There's blood that flows through there. There's a vascular connection that has to happen between the Christian and Jesus Christ for life to take place. His life has to flow through us and in us. It has to be a vascular connection. You can't get this living close to Christ, in the proximity of Christ. You could come to this church for 100 years and never get this vascular connection. There has to be a joining between you and Jesus Christ in contact. So the joints formed by grafting are not as strong as naturally formed joints. Now this is straight out of a study on grafting. The joints that are formed by grafting are not as strong as the naturally formed joints. So a physical weak point often still occurs at the graft because only the newly formed tissue grows together. The existing structural tissue or the wood of the stalk and plant does not fuse. When you join with Jesus Christ, you join with Him in spirit. Your flesh does not make a connection with Jesus Christ. It can't. It's part of the old tissue. It cannot join. There's always a weak point between you and Jesus, and it's that flesh. The flesh does not join. You join in spirit. You join in your life's blood. You do not join in your flesh. Your flesh is always working against you. It's always desiring the natural, its natural birth and a connection with the natural things of this world. So our communion with Jesus is weak because it can be weak because of this flesh. So we have to work to keep our connection strong with Christ. It can be broken, not in salvation, but in communion. It can be broken at any time because of this flesh. It's weak there. So we have to connect to Christ through His Word, through prayer, through righteous living. We have to keep a communion that way. Let's turn over to the book of John. Book of John, chapter 15. Jesus uses these analogies of fruit and root and spirit a lot. He said in John 15, "I am the true vine, and my Father is the husbandman. Every branch in me that beareth not fruit, he taketh away. And every branch that beareth fruit, he purgeth it and make it bring forth more fruit." Brother Dean did a great lesson on that Wednesday night. "Now ye are clean through the word which I have spoken unto you. Abide in me and I in you, and the branch cannot bear fruit of itself except it abide in the vine. No more can ye except ye abide in me." Now listen to this. "I am the vine, ye are the branches. He that abideth in me and I in him, the same bringeth forth much fruit. For without me ye can do nothing." All you were capable of as a wild olive branch was to produce wild things. You have no other ability because that was what was being flowed and fed through you. You were joined to the natural things of this world. Now that you've been grafted in, goodness can flow through you. Now, you're not perfect. You never will be perfect. But if you tap into the Spirit of Jesus Christ, He can flow that Spirit through you, and you can take on His righteousness. And you can start to love people. And you can start to be good to people. And you can be a friend to people. And you can help people. You notice I keep saying people, 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 because Jesus was all about others. And we should be all about others. We're so selfish. It's so hard for us to put others in front of ourselves. And I'm guilty myself. I'm so focused. I'm so selfish. But that's not the Spirit that Jesus is flowing through me. And it's not the Spirit He's flowing through you. He wants us to reach out. He wants us to bear fruit. Without Him, we can do nothing. Philippians 4:13 says, "But in all things, I can do all things through Christ which strengthens me." So what's holding us back? What is it that's keeping you from being that better person that you've got in your mind? That vision that you've got of yourself? What's holding you back? I'm telling you today that you're grafted in. You're grafted in to the root that all power and all good things can flow through. So if you're scared, a lot of times before I have to do something big or something that I'm uncomfortable with and the fear starts to set in, I quote this verse to myself, "For God hath not given us the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind." So I would encourage you guys to write that verse on your heart. And whenever you feel timid about stepping out, you feel timid about reaching and doing something for someone or something that's out of your comfort zone, that you quote to yourself that God didn't give me this spirit of fear. If God didn't give it, where did it come from? Don't be held back. Go do these things. You know, God saved you for you. And this isn't on the outline, but it's coming through very strong. You have to be what God made you to be. And don't try to copy what other people are. God can use you greatest and the most when you're just being yourself. And you're operating without fear and knowing that you're tapped into the vine. And that you're just doing the version of you, the version that God created you to be. And you're doing His work in your way. You don't have to be perfect. You don't have to be like Brother Ken. I don't have to teach like Brother Adam. He doesn't have to teach like me, Brother Mike. We don't have to try to be each other. We just have to be ourselves and let God use us and flow through us. And that's all you have to do. And God can use you that way. As a matter of fact, if you're an orange tree, you can't produce apples. God needs us to produce all kinds of different fruit. Produce oranges. Don't try to produce something that you're not. So just a couple of thoughts. Let's see where I am on time. In that same thought, I was reading the other day that we have about 50,000 self-talk thoughts a day. That's when you're speaking to yourself in your mind. That's when you're saying, "Man, I'm an idiot," or "Man, I shouldn't have done that," or "Man, don't I look good," or, you know, whatever it is you say to yourself, or "Maybe I should turn left." I don't know what you guys think about, but you have about 50,000 of those a day. And they've also proven that every time you have a thought, whether it's positive or negative, whether it's totally conscious or not, your body reacts to it. You guys have all heard of cortisol. When you have stress, this stuff, and I could get Jennifer up here to explain it, but this cortisol, these bad hormones start flowing through your body and start hurting your physical body. Have you ever seen anyone that's gone through? Have you ever seen a president before and after pictures? Okay, you age, right? Or a preacher. So stress ages you. It's bad for you. You have 50,000 thoughts a day. If all 50,000 of those self-talk thoughts are negative, what are you going to be? If your own thinking mind doesn't like you, or doesn't like your husband or your wife, or doesn't like anything about what's going on in your world, how are you going to be? What's your countenance going to be? What's your productiveness for God going to be? Get control of your self-talk. Get control. Paul said, he told King Agrippa, I think myself happy. Now, Paul is saying something here that's very important. He was in a situation where he was in prison. They were negotiating where he was going to end up. He was in a bad deal right here. He spent a lot of time in prison. He got beaten. And in the middle of that, Brother Jonathan taught it the other night. He taught about how in the middle of all the suffering that Paul had, he was sing. He thought himself happy. And I know that's easier said than done. But if you can turn 50,000 thoughts, if you could maybe get 20,000 of them in a different direction, and maybe it starts, okay, 30,000, okay? Okay, maybe 40,000. Now you're doing pretty good. So work on yourselves to try to think yourself happy. Let Paul be an example for that. One final thought on the medical side of things. They did an MRI scan of the brain, and they had people looking at projections of a sunset, and then they had people imagine a sunset. The brain, the MRI scans of the brain, showed the exact same reactions. I had a professor once that told me perception is reality. I stayed after class to argue with him. I don't know why I was so passionate about that subject, because in my mind, no sir, there are absolute truths, and perception is not reality. It doesn't matter what people think, it matters what is. Well, I'm a little bit older now. I'm probably, you know, still 10 years younger than he was at the time. But perception is a really big deal. The way you set your mind to see things, the way people see you, it just feeds on itself. Perception may not be reality, but well, I've seen perception become reality more times than not. So if you can think yourself happy and work and let Christ flow His life-giving blood through you, you may wake up one day and actually be happy. Wouldn't that be something? So Christ can do these things for us. And I will say, as we grow and as we mature, I mean, I'm 38 right now, and you could imagine the way I felt when I realized a third of my life was already over. So those of you who are doing math in your head, yes, I will live to 120. But we can't get bogged down in the things of this world. We've got to tap into the Spirit of Christ. And, you know, we're made up of three pieces, body, mind, and spirit, body, mind, and soul. You can't disconnect those things. You know, we need to be, have our minds healthy, have our spirits healthy, and I'm sorry, but have our bodies healthy. And I'm not saying being slim and trim, I'm saying just be healthy. And that'll make a whole person. And I believe Christ wants us to do these things. I believe Christ wants to work through us. I believe Christ can work through us. And we don't have to stay in the trenches. We don't have to stay low. We don't have to stay in a sorry state of mind. We can do. We can go. We can build. Christ needs our hands. He needs us to go build things for Him. He needs us to encourage each other. We can't all be the person that's dragging. We have to be able to step up every now and then and tap into the life-giving blood of Christ and encourage one another. So I would encourage you guys to do that today. And I hope through Christ we can all become better people. Thank you for your attention.